What kind of new lawyers are needed? The Dean of Maine Law discusses the future of legal education and the law profession. Danielle Conway came on board as the new dean of the University of Maine School of Law 2 years ago during a challenging time for law schools across the country. Nationally, law school enrollments are falling. One law school, Whittier in California, has closed, and others have merged. The legal profession overall took a hit after the recession, and now online services such as LegalZoom are changing the game. Conway has used her tenure so far to focus on rural law, legal aid, and diversity. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll talk with Danielle Conway about her personal story, her vision for Maine's only law school, and the future of the legal profession. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A typical legal education may once have involved memorizing archaic case law, suffering through the Socratic method, and pulling all-nighters in the hope of passing the bar. But the modern law school is adjusting to a changing economy and society. With me in the studio today, the Dean of the University of Maine School of Law, Danielle Conway, was named Dean of the Law School in 2015. She is a lawyer, a professor, and also a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army. Danielle, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you for having me.
As always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Are you considering going to law school? What questions do you have about getting a law degree or the role of the legal profession today? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. If you don't mind, Danielle, I'd love to start the conversation with a little bit about you. And I understand it is your mother who inspired you to lead the career you've led. You know, our mom's generation didn't have the same opportunities we did, and especially your mom. Tell us about her.
So my mom is absolutely phenomenal, and I believe all mothers are. And she was a believer in education, and she believed in me, her daughter. She put those two things together and decided that the way that I was going to succeed was with an unflappable commitment to my own education, and I can't thank her for that gift.
She was a single mom who put herself through law school and raised you and your siblings, right?
Yeah, and I think it's okay to share here. My mom got herself through law school and got me through law school by going to the racetrack and going to the casino and making money so that we could actually survive.
Wow.
Yeah, she could count cards. Yeah, I didn't tell anybody that.
Wow, that is, she could be in a movie.
She really could.
Oh, my goodness. So I just read your introduction, a lieutenant colonel in the Army, yet also a law school professor. Sort of what came first, what came second? How did you get to where you are? How did you get to Portland, Maine?
How did I get here? Well, there was a slow boat involved. No, my mom was, as you say, the real driver of my course. And the one thing she always taught me was to say yes to everything. So when I was going to school and I had an opportunity to have my degree underwritten by the Army, I said yes. So I was a member of the Reserve Officer Training Corps, which got me into the military. I then had that opportunity to have my schools funded, both at the undergraduate and the law school level. And then I became a lawyer. So those two things were...
Have you been deployed? Have you served overseas?
I have not, fortunately. I was one of those people who just came around at the time when we were doing peace-building missions primarily. And so I backed up people who went to Korea, and that's how I actually wound up in Hawaii. So the military took me to Hawaii. I then became acquainted to members of the law school there. They liked me, and then they asked me to join their faculty.
Oh, wow. And I know you came to Maine a few years ago first to serve as a visiting professor. And what did you think from Hawaii to Maine? I mean, I know you grew up in Philadelphia, so you knew about winter.
Right. Right. I am no stranger to winter, and I love boots. So Maine was fine for me. And what I thought when I first got here, and it was in February, I said, wow, that snow is deep. But at the same time, I thought, what a magnificent place. It was just extraordinary. And that vision of Maine, even though I went back to Hawaii, never left me.
Wow. Now, we haven't said that you're African-American, first African-American dean at Maine Law School, the University of Maine School of Law. You came from Hawaii, which is perhaps the most diverse state in the nation, maybe tied with California for that. And you came to a state that is one of the least diverse. What was that like for you?
Well, everybody says that, and I sort of challenge people. I don't look at Maine as the least diverse state. I think there is significant diversity here. There are Native peoples here. There are new Americans who have immigrated here, both skilled and not. There are people like me who are traditional people of color, if you will. And these people are here. Now the question is, where are they dispersed? And so while I know people have all of these percentages that they refer to, there's nothing like holistic diversity to look to, that it is here and it's being practiced.
What do you mean by that, holistic diversity?
Right. What I mean is actual real and measurable exchange in terms of culture, in terms of religion, in terms of experiences, and yes, of course, in terms of race.
Since you've come, you've kind of tweaked the direction of the University of Maine Law School with an emphasis, I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, on rural law.
Yes.
And on the legal aid clinic.
Yes.
So tell me some of the facts behind rural law. I understand, as with so many other professions in this program, we've talked about nursing, we've talked about teaching, that the lawyers in rural areas are aging out of their profession. How critical is it that we get young people into rural areas practicing law?
Well, to answer your question, it is critical, but let me step back a little bit and say why rural is a really important part of my vision for the law school. The rural question is occurring all over this nation. It's not just Maine. And I experienced it vividly in Hawaii because people don't think about it, but Hawaii is a rural state. And so it's less a question about the term or the moniker rural and more about access and affordability for people who inhabit all segments of our community. And so in that spirit, if I define it that way, then let's call it the rural question. And in Maine, it is critical because we are an expansive state where people are living, some at the fringes of our society, and we need to be able to bring the process to them. I've always found it important to understand place in terms of community. And in Maine, this is a unique place that we as legal service providers have to respond to. That means we respond to the rural question. We do not make the rural question answer to us.
So what is the University of Maine Law School doing? What would a law student today do in a rural community?
Thankfully, with the help of wonderful partners in the community, the Maine State Board of Bar and Overseers, the University of Maine School of Law, the University of Southern Maine, also other legal aid organizers, we've created a rural lawyer pilot project. What that project does is it transports students to rural communities and it shows them through access to mentors and legal service providers how they would service the community and what opportunities are actually there for them in the community. I like to think of it as adding another dimension to the study and the practice of law and making those facets much more clear and much more focused about what a student can actually do in a community if placed there. Again, place being very important.
Pretend I'm a student. I'm saying to you, but why, Dean Conway, should I practice rural law? I'm not going to make any money if I practice any rural law. And I have student loan debts, serious debts.
That is a fantastic proposition. And I always tell our students, don't talk to me about money. Talk to me about defending the Constitution and promoting the rule of law and making the legal process available and accessible to everyone in your community. If you do that, then you will see a return on your investment.
All right. How far in are we? It's too early to know how many lawyers we're going to be placing in rural Maine, isn't it?
So I can speak to it anecdotally. We've had two students who've gone out and been the inaugural cohort for the Aurora Laurier Pilot Project, and they loved it. We also have students, prospective students, who are entering the law school because they identify this as a pathway for their future employment and their future success as lawyers. So we have students who are quite interested and prospective law students who find that this message of rural practice resonates with them.
How is the nature of who wants to go into law school changing, or is it?
It is changing. I think we went through in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s this sort of merger and acquisition phase of the law. And students now are seeing that community-based service is what is responsive to what is needed. And so they come to law school with that already in their minds, and their undergraduate programs are informing them about this. And so there is this dichotomy between service to community or, as you had earlier mentioned, the bottom line, the six-figure salary, and we're getting away from the latter.
All right. Well, on the line with us right now, Andrew Kaufman. He's professor of practice and director of the Regulatory Compliance Program at the University of Maine School of Law. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so make the Regulatory Compliance Program something that the rest of us can understand what those words mean and why it's important for our community.
Well, consistent with the dean's comments just a moment ago, we've been looking to identify here at the law school opportunities that we have and can have to move into some new spaces, reimagine a bit legal education, and fill roles that have not traditionally been filled by law schools following the traditional program. And one of these is in the area of regulatory compliance, and in particular directed to non-lawyers. People who are active in the regulatory compliance role in industry, in business, in our nonprofits, even in our government sector. And we've been developing a certificate program that we're launching in just 2.5 weeks with our first class that is going to offer on a collaborative basis a partnership, if you will, with business, industry, these other groups that we've mentioned, to help the people who are active in these organizations complying with regulatory impositions.
So if someone's an entrepreneur, say somebody's developed a food product, how to comply with USDA and FDA regulations, things like that.
Yes, absolutely. And then the notion is that we can use this to help the state in economic and workforce development. You know, we hear a lot about regulatory impositions getting in the way of entrepreneurship. We're not going to make the regulatory burden go away in what we're doing, but we're hopeful that by giving people some understanding of how regulatory oversight works, some background in the vocabulary, if you will, some understanding of the initiatives and motivations behind the regulators, we can help position our people here in the state better to navigate the shoals of the regulatory process and prosper.
Well, Andrew, thank you so much for calling in. Andrew Kaufman, professor and director of the Regulatory Compliance Program at Maine Law. The legal profession is changing in so many ways. We won't have time to talk about them all today. But one thing I want to ask you, Dean Conway, is how the online services, the LegalZoom, things like that have one, changed the law profession, but also how that what that means for law students.
Certainly. And those particular organizations have a purpose and they have a role to play in the delivery of legal service, but they are definitely not going to be the sole providers. So if you're dealing with a discrete matter, if you're dealing with a matter that has very little need for mediation or negotiation, you can really rely on that new innovation in legal service provision. But where we see the most importance for lawyers is the role of intermediary, the negotiator, the navigator, the problem solver who really deals with tough issues and gets people sometimes through their worst days.
Does this mean, though, with the advent of the online services, that the legal profession may be smaller in the future and more specialized? Because some of the things that were, I don't know if the right word is basic, but, you know,
I would say the word is dispersed. So there are discrete issues that can be handled through technology, artificial intelligence, web applications. And so the dispersal, the dissemination of legal services is done differently. I don't think it'll be a smaller pool. I actually think that'll grow the pool of who needs legal services and what tools can actually respond to that need.
I've read that folks believe that because of these services, the cost of legal services in general will come down, and people who didn't believe before that they could afford them will now try to, will access them. Is that your thinking?
I think you are spot on. We actually have a program out of the University of Maine School of Law called Apps for Justice, created by Professor Lois Lupica, and she actually learned how to code in order to deliver a web-based platform that would assist tenants who are having landlord-tenant problems. It'd be a lot easier to access that app and get initial information than to try to pay an hourly fee to see a lawyer.
So you may end up in the end of a dispute or an issue paying for an hour or two, not 25 hours of legal fees. Isn't that interesting? Well, this conversation we're having is with Danielle Conway. She's the dean of the University of Maine School of Law. We'd love to hear from you. What are your questions about law school, about the legal profession, about the kinds of young lawyers that are coming out of Maine? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine College of Health Professions, offering real-world training in nursing, radiology, and nuclear medicine, mchp.edu. And IAE, presenting an evening with David Sedaris, coming to Merrill Auditorium on October 15th. Tickets at davidsedarisontour.com.
In 1957 in Little Rock, Arkansas, the National Guard turned away 9 African-American students from Central High School. President Eisenhower sent in the 101st Airborne to escort them.
Mob rule cannot be allowed to override the decisions of our courts.
The surviving Little Rock 9 gather to remember that historic moment this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. Season 2 of High School Quiz Show Maine gets underway this fall, our first full season where 16 finalist teams from all around Maine will compete, with the winner then taking on the top regional teams from New Hampshire and Massachusetts. If your school is interested in taking the qualifying test later this fall, we'd like to hear from you by mid-October. So now is the time to start planning and let us know you'll be part of this year's competition. Information about High School Quiz Show Maine, what's involved, how to form a team and register for the new season, and also to watch last season's contests, is at mainepublic.org. Just click on television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Legal Education Today. With me in the studio, Danielle Conway, who is the dean of the University of Maine School of Law. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us right now, Crystal Williams. She's in the University of Maine Law School, class of 2017. Crystal, thanks for joining us and congratulations.
Thank you. My pleasure.
I understand you work with the Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic. Tell me about it and what you do there.
Well, I actually had an externship there my last semester of law school. And so I was a student attorney. I was sworn in before the court, and I actually had several clients whose matters I was handling before the court under the supervision of one of the faculty supervisors at Maine School of Law.
What kind of cases did you handle?
They were very disparate. I had two cases that were both divorce proceedings, but at very different stages. In one case, the student in the prior semester had already reached a resolution, but the other side had appealed, and so I was responding to that motion before the court. And in the second divorce matter, I was actually part of the intake team, so it was in the very beginning stages. So I was working with the client to understand her issues and to understand what and helping to map out a strategy of how to actually find a resolution that was within the law but also met her needs. And then the third case that I was working on, the third client I had, was actually a guardianship petition. So it was a person who was here who was a legal resident in the United States and had a family member, an underage family member, come over, and she was seeking guardianship of that family member.
Wow. So real serious cases with real consequences.
Absolutely.
So how did working with the people at the Legal Aid Clinic influence what you'd like to do with your law degree?
Wow. I'll have to say it actually made the choice a lot harder. So I came from I have my MBA, and I came from corporate America, and moving to Maine was very much a lifestyle decision for me. And I also come from very humble beginnings. I grew up in a Habitat for Humanity community, so I grew up in the type of community that the Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic is designed to serve, people who are low income. So I have very much a heart for wanting to help people who can't afford or think they can't afford traditional legal services. I also have a corporate background, and so I was really trying to decide what type of law would best meet both my needs for professional success, but also just kind of that deep spiritual need of wanting to give back and wanting to contribute to the community. And being at the Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic, you know, I really got both of those. They came together very nicely, and I was able to work on some really meaningful, you know, situations and with clients who desperately needed our help. And I was, at that point, I had decided to go back into corporate law. And so working with my clients and seeing how much they needed the help and how much I was able to make a meaningful impact in their life in a positive way, and as Dean Conway alluded to, walk with them through a very difficult time, it made me question, you know, whether or not I was making the right decision. And ultimately, I do think I landed in the right place. But being a part of the Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic is an experience that I will take with me, you know, for the rest of my career.
Do you feel people have misconceptions about what law students are like or what lawyers do?
I do. I think that, and I will say that I myself had some very serious misconceptions as well, mostly from the media. I'm a movie junkie, and lawyers are not always portrayed in the most positive light. And I definitely had some preconceptions before I started working at my current firm. And I do believe that lawyers get a bad rap, you know, to put it quite bluntly, because the law school students at Maine Law, I had some of the most compassionate, intelligent, engaged classmates. I could not be more proud of the people that I interacted with at Maine Law, and particularly the students in the Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic. The amount of hours that we spent there over and beyond our educational requirements just really speaks to the heart that at least Maine Law students has to, you know, serve the community and to be good lawyers.
Well, Crystal, thanks so much for being willing to call in today. Crystal Williams, University of Maine School of Law, class of 2017. You were nodding, Danielle, as she spoke. What in Crystal's story
resonates with me?
Yeah, thanks for finishing my sentence.
No
That's
problem.
Where I was going.
You know, most of us come from very austere backgrounds, and we are people who just want to do well and do good and be recognized. And so Crystal and her classmates, they are phenomenal representatives of thriving and striving for something better. And again, it doesn't mean money. It means being part of a community. And that's why I was nodding my head, because she certainly is part of this Maine community, and I'm so proud of her.
We have an email from Nikki. Are many of the students at the law school older or non-traditional?
Thank you for that question. We at Maine Law enjoy a more mature student body, and we really appreciate that. They come already with lived experiences, with careers in hand. And what that does is it helps the learning, especially for those who don't come with prior careers, but it also helps the teaching because we're able to do much more incorporation of real world concepts based upon where people are coming from and what they're bringing to the law school.
All right. What? How many of your students are the traditional right out of college and how many are come with some life experience
yes.
outside of college?
Our average age right now is 28, and so we could put 50% below and 50% above that mean.
Mm-hmm.
So
All
it's
right.
a really good mix.
We'll go to Garland and Michael. Hi, Michael. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you. I'm interested in what other practice models are being thought of for remunerating these people who would go to rural areas, or any kind of telephone practice, prepaid legal, or practices that are being used in the medical field to develop practices of people who are less trained than doctors to do things that doctors used to do. Is there any thinking along that line? And second question is there any source of funding that's being looked at to reduce student loans for graduates who are willing to practice in underserved areas? And I'll pass. Thank you.
Very astute questions. And the second actually really answers the first. In our rural lawyer pilot project, we have built-in loan repayment assistance for those students who decide that this is a pathway that they would like to pursue. We also know that in Maine, there is loan repayment assistance for the STEM fields, but I think we would do well to extend those, and we would welcome the legislature taking up that question of loan repayment assistance, because this is a need in our communities, and this legal service need is going to bolster economic development.
All right, Michael, thanks so much for your question. A related question in a tweet here. This is from Jim. Do you think that legal fees would be less and lawyers could take more socially responsible cases if law school was free?
Oh, from your mouth or fingers? So I would love a model where we could actually underwrite the education of lawyers. We have actually at the University of Maine School of Law one of the lowest tuition rates in the nation. And that's what makes us actually very attractive to people out of state. So, yes, would I absolutely love that model? I certainly would. I would love it if the legislature were able to do that. But I don't think that the legislature really realistically can do that. So there are other ways to do that. And one of the ways is through philanthropy. The other way is to see this as a community public good and have people invest in that public good and select the students that actually mirror our community and allow them to experience this wonderful educational opportunity so that they can ultimately serve.
You mentioned one of the reasons that the Maine law is attractive. Is Maine law facing some of the scary decisions that other law schools are around the country? We've heard about one closing in California, others having to merge. Are you in the same position? Is every morning a little scary?
No, every morning is actually fabulous here because we have a community that understands the importance of promoting the rule of law. And so really what this law school has faced is operating under the radar for quite a while and not boasting about the work that we do. And so part of my being here is to have a little bit of a big mouth and to boast a little bit about this law school and how it serves that rule of law. But we have, as I mentioned, one of the most competitive tuition rates in the nation. So people look at us as a really great value. And we also have a fabulous and a very lean faculty and staff. So we don't have the kind of overhead that a lot of these other law schools have.
All right. We'll go to Stan, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Stan. Go ahead.
Hi. And hello, Dean. Thank you for your kind words about non-traditional students.
Hi, Stan.
Hi. I wanted to ask you, and you just mentioned about the law school's role in promoting the rule of law. Lately, in the news, the rule of law is something that's talked about. For example, this administration's travel ban and the pardoning of Joe Arpaio. Mm-hmm. Those are places where public policy and the rule of law intersect. And while it's the law school to promote that rule of law and an understanding, it's also, I think, probably your role to maintain a position that's not divisive. How do you navigate that fine line?
So thanks, Dan. And I navigate it with my absolute devotion to the rule of law. And first, let's actually deconstruct that, right? Because a lot of people are saying, well, what is that? So the rule of law is this principle that law should govern a nation as opposed to being governed by the decision making of officials. It's also this concept that we operate with certain constraints on governmental action. And that is meant to actually recognize people's fundamental freedoms. But people's freedoms have to be enjoyed in the context of the larger society. And then finally, this devotion to the rule of law is so deep within me because it means that everyone is subject to the same law and nobody stands above it. And so I look at my role as one of teacher and guide, and I have to impartially teach students about the rule of law. If they see me acting outside of that teaching, then I'm doing them a disservice. And that's the way I toe the line. If I can create an environment where people can exercise their critical thinking and their discourse in service to the rule of law, then I'm doing my job.
Stan, thanks for your question. We're joined now by Brody Haverly Jandro. He's been a participant and is now a mentor in the PLUS program, the Pre-Law Undergraduate Scholars Program. Hi, Brody. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Brody, what's the goal of the Pre-Law Undergraduate Scholars Program, and what was it like for you to go through it?
Yeah, so the goal of the PLUS program is really to diversify the legal profession here in Maine and around the country. And my experience with the program is really unique and kind of cool because, like you mentioned, I was a student as well as a mentor this past year for the program. And really, when people ask me what the best part of the program was for me, I automatically go to the people because the staff, administration, and the professors at Maine Law were incredible. Really meeting people from around the state and around the country and even around the world with the perspectives and experiences that they had was invaluable for me. I know, and also meeting the people that we were able to talk with and sit down with around the state, public officials, attorneys, was really, really interesting to me and really was the forehold of my experience. And I mentioned this to Dean Conway and to many others that the PLUS program really has shaped my perspective on the legal profession and on why I want to go to law school in the first place. So it was really invaluable for me.
That's what I was going to ask you. What do you want to do next? You want to go to law school. Do you know what kind of law you want to practice, or you just want to get in first?
I really want to use my law degree to influence public policy and decision-making at the legislative level. I like constitutional law a lot, but really being exposed to the many areas of law during the program, it really made it harder for me to decide which practice what I wanted to practice because it really was all interesting to me. So,
all right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Brody Haverly Jandro with the Pre-Law Undergraduate Scholars Program at the University of Maine School of Law. We do have to take another break. If you have questions for Dean Danielle Conway, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Maine Narrow Gauge Railroad in Portland, inviting you to learn more about their events as well as the benefits of becoming a member at mainenarrowgauge.org.
On the next Intelligence Squared U.S., a series of debates on China, the U.S., and their complex relationship.
So are we destined for a war with China?
I don't think so, but we certainly ought to take steps to prevent that.
That's all coming up on Intelligence Squared U.S., where the world's leading thinkers debate today's most critical issues.
That's coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. Filmmaker Ken Burns' The Vietnam War continues tonight at 8 on Maine Public Television with Part 7, The Veneer of Civilization. With the country at odds over the war, draft-age Americans face wrenching choices. After chaos roils the Democratic Convention, Nixon narrowly wins the presidency. In Vietnam, soldiers on all sides witnessed terrible savagery and unflinching courage. Tonight's segment will also repeat again at 10 this evening. And don't forget, if you've fallen behind in watching or prefer to watch at your own pace, the Vietnam War is available on demand at mainpublic.org and through Passport. It's also available on the Maine Public app and the PBS app for devices such as Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire TV. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we're talking about the role of law school today, and specifically here at UMaine. Joining me in the studio, Danielle Conway, who is Dean of the University of Maine School of Law. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go up to Gouldsboro and Bruce. Hi, Bruce. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say congratulations to Dean Conway and say that we have some parallel paths. I am a retired Philadelphia high school teacher.
Neat.
I wonder. I retired and went to law school at Temple. I am more or less retired from practicing law now, and I'm up here in rural Maine and very much interested in this whole discussion. And I'd like to ask, Dean, where did you go to high school in Philly?
So can I even go back to elementary school?
I
went to Greenfield, and then I went to the High School for Engineering and Science in Philadelphia.
Oh, my.
And my mother graduated from Temple Law in the evening program at the age of 46.
Wow. I graduated from Temple Law evening program at the age of 60.
We got to get together, Bruce.
I'm up to Gouldsboro.
I'm coming.
It's pretty.
Let me tell you, I'm so proud of you. And I did. I taught at Central and I taught at engineering.
No,
as well.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, second year, yes.
Let's get together.
Yeah. I'll drop you an email. I've got at the law school.
Yeah, and you just gave me a chance to plug our website, mainlaw.maine.edu. Just send it there.
mainlaw.maine.edu.
Correct.
Got it.
Thanks.
Absolutely. It's been a wonderful hour of listening to this program. It always is. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Bruce.
I look forward to staying in touch. Bye-bye.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to go to an email. This is from Brad. He writes, Maine Law recently announced a joint degree program in the medical field and law. What other joint degree programs are available? Do these programs, including law, offer night courses and degree programs? And then he has another question. What's the failure success rate for Maine Law grads? So let's start with the first one, joint degree programs. What might be coming down the pipeline? And will there be night courses and degree programs?
So thank you for that question. We actually have a JD Master of Public Health combination, our dual degree there, and a JD MPPM, a Master in Public Policy and Management. We do that as a partner with the Muskie School. So we do not currently have a nighttime part-time program, but we are very flexible and we offer part-time opportunities for students. So if you would allow me to name drop a little bit, Mark Dion, Senator Mark Dion, was one of our flexible part-time graduates. And when he was sheriff, we worked around his schedule. So we try to be as flexible as we can because we know we are the only in public law school in the state of Maine and that we are the providers of this legal education. And so we try to work with you.
All right. And then what's the failure success rate for Maine Law graduates?
Well, I like to say that we are really tracking well. So we usually can get up to about 96%.
What do you measure?
I like to measure graduation, especially now, because there are many people, as you heard from the callers, who are using that law degree in a very unique and innovative way. So a lot of the folks who come to our law school, they don't necessarily want to take the bar and practice law. They want to do other things. And so I like to measure it by graduation rate, how many people we graduate who after they enter.
All right, great. We're going to go up to Falmouth and Steve. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me. I was just curious, being that you're a newish dean, but you've got your feet firmly on the ground and running at this point, what would you say is the legacy that you'd like to leave behind when you finish your career or Do you think that's going to change during your career?
It's a really good question. I have to be really honest with you, Steve. I'm an older mother, and I have the child of my absolute dreams, and I consider him my legacy. And the legacy then to support him is to make sure that I contribute as a public servant, that people see me as a public servant, and they use me as a role for that purpose.
Steve, thanks for your question. We have a, let's see, an email here from the Gannett House Project. We are lucky to be working with the Maine School of Law as we develop a new First Amendment Museum project in Augusta, the Gannett House Project. I wonder if Dean Conway will share her thoughts on what role a law school can play in education for the community or lifelong learning.
Well, I love that Gannett House project. They are doing some fabulous work there. And I would love to partner with them in creating a space where we can use video to teach about the First Amendment. We can use oral tradition to talk about the importance of the Constitution and its connection to freedom of expression, and then to actually work out from there and use other kinds of mediums to explain the importance of law in the community. We just did a program about a year ago, Civil Rights Through Art and Law. And I really enjoyed that process because it was new for us. It was how we are reimagining this law school. And so we're not just saying, oh, go read this or go read that. We're actually trying to visually demonstrate the vitality and the significance of the Constitution, the supreme law of our land.
And you have events for the public as well, right?
That's exactly right. And so these events that I'm talking about, they are not for people who are hardcore pursuing law degrees. Rather, we are engaging in these events so that we can show the community we want to be a service provider to you. And so we want to bring you the programming that you are interested in. A couple of other programs that we're doing, we just did a program that talks about Courts Matter. And that was to actually give a space where Mainers could begin to discuss how they can get involved in selecting judges. Another program that we've done is our Constitution Day program, which is an annual program that my colleague, Professor Jennifer Riggins, produces. And she got a wonderful speaker for us this year, Joe Singer, to commemorate Constitution Day. And he talked about federal Indian law in the context of the Constitution. Really great stuff.
Judith on Facebook asks, while addressing the legal needs of the poor is an attractive and necessary goal, the Trump administration has proposed deep cuts for the Legal Services Corporation. Do you know how legal services for poor people in Maine can be continued if these cuts occur? And I should probably step back. Is Legal Services Corporation the corporation that funds programs such as Pine Tree Legal and others in this state?
In part, yes. And that's a really important question. On October 15th, I'm actually headed to Boston to give a talk about Legal Services Corporation and the impact for Maine. And what we will do, we will always have our Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic, and I will double down on how to raise money to make sure that this component of that legal services cadre stays funded and in place. But it is an imperative. And I tell you what, if federal support for Legal Services Corporation becomes mired in a political debate, then we need to take this to our state legislature and say it is imperative to make sure that we have this service for all members of our community in Maine.
We'll go to Rich calling from Moosehead. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, thank you for taking my call. I was fired in 2013 from a job because I refused to run a hot-wired ski lift in my local area. They were running it without any safeties. Mm-hmm. And I ended up with a Maine human rights case, and they had a lawyer, and because I was poor, I couldn't afford a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I got nowhere. And
mm-hmm.
and even though I had proved the lift had been run that way, and I literally was stonewalled by the state investigators because an inspector was involved in wrongdoing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a legal tangle for me. And my only choice now is to file fraud against the people that lied to the Maine Human Rights Commission. And I have to do that again without a lawyer. And I wonder if there's any services available for people like me that you know, because it's a civil matter. Nobody could help me.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that I absolutely admire about the Cumberland Legal Aid Clinic is that my colleague, Professor Deirdre Smith, she knows how to get people in touch with the folks who need help. And she has a real great thumb on the scale of who can provide that kind of assistance. And so if you would stay on the line and just give me your information, I'll make sure to get you in touch with her.
Thanks, Lewis. We'll see if we can figure out how to keep you right there. But in the meantime, we'll go to Matt, who's calling from Biddeford. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a question for the dean. I recently had an awesome experience at the Maine Community Law Center, and I love what they're mm-hmm. doing, providing access to justice and also opportunities for young lawyers or new lawyers. I was wondering if there's any consideration about a formal partnership there.
Thank you for that question. In fact, Liz Stout is a great supporter of the law school she teaches in our curriculum, and we have investigated initial ways to have a more formal relationship with the MCLC. And again, this goes to philanthropy and fundraising, and it takes a lot to actually forge that kind of formal partnership, but we are in an informal partnership with Liz Stout and the MCLC, and she hires our graduates as fellows in her program.
Matt, thanks for your call. Danielle, what advice do you offer to people who are thinking about going to law school but aren't sure if I'm cut out for it, if I can afford it?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of questions should someone ask themselves?
How quickly can I get on the phone and call those folks at that law school at Maine Law? That's what they should do. You know, a lot of people will put obstacles and barriers in front of themselves because they think, oh, I can't do that. It's not meant for me. I think pick up the phone and call. And we have a wonderful Office of Admissions dean. Her name is Caroline Wilshusen. And she actually walks you through those steps and helps you to answer those questions. And so I guess the one thing I would tell people as they even think about this potential opportunity, don't put a roadblock ahead of yourself. You might actually find that this is the exact path you should be on. And we will be there to help you one way or the other. We're not about bringing a whole bunch of people into the law school and padding our admissions numbers. Rather, what we like to do is talk with people and say, let us help you figure out if this path is for you.
How many students are at UMaine Law right now?
So we have 84 students in our class of 2020, and we take great pride in this class of 2020. They have come at a fabulous time, and they came to us with our admissions numbers being up by 25%. So this is an extraordinary class. We're really happy with that.
Do you have a cap? Is there, you know, we're not going to take any more than this many a year?
So I want to keep the range between 80 and 85. I do not want to go to our higher numbers that we've been at before at 103. And here's the reason. I don't want to be seen as just wanting to educate a bunch of law students. I actually want to be able to make sure we're providing the amount of lawyers that Maine needs. And so we go through a lot of data analysis to make sure we are taking in the exact number of candidates we need for our community.
So much emphasis now in higher education on these rankings. How important is it for UMaine's law school to get its ranking higher?
Well, if only our U.S. News and World Report ranking were as high as our ugly building and architectural design ranking, I'd be happy.
You think it's ugly?
No, I don't. But apparently Architectural Digest does.
Oh, that's terrible. So anyway, Danielle, on the just final thoughts about the nature of law schools and law students today. How is what's going on today different than what people might think?
So what's going on today is a lot of reflection about democracy and our government and our commitment to the rule of law. I think that we have a wonderful opportunity to capture the brilliance of a new cadre of prospective lawyers who believe that they need to be leaders in the community. And that's what the University of Maine School of Law is going to focus its efforts on, recruiting those leaders who want to serve their community, and that community is Maine.
Well, thank you so much for being here on Maine Calling. Danielle Conway has been dean of the University of Maine School of Law since 2015. She's also a lawyer, a professor, and a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. This program will be rebroadcast at 8. Tomorrow on the program, a conversation about mycology and why mushrooms from Maine are in demand for both food and medicine. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.